Good morning to you. I appreciate so much you coming and being here with us today. We're going to be talking about friendship a little bit. First of all, some of the fundamental principles about friendship, and then look at some principles in the New Testament where we see Jesus and the kind of friend he was and who he was a friend to. So think about a moment or two when you look at this idea. I tell folks I came down here the first year of my dad on a motorcycle. The next year, I wanted to come back, and so I had a little Citation car, had three sons and suitcases. It wouldn't fit, and we couldn't get here in that little car, so I went out and bought a $200 van about 2 weeks before time to come. And so we set out down this way. We got to Franklin, Kentucky, and the alternator went out late at night. The lights started getting dim, so I stopped and put an alternator on. We went a little further, I think somewhere down about Texarkana, and the radiator went out. So I had to get that, and we stopped at a police station on Sunday morning and changed clothes, and I was working on my van. I had my suit on. I laid under the van to work on something. I didn't have any hair in my head. I got some rocks stuck to the back of my head. Didn't know it. It's pebbles. I went into a Bible study and was sitting there talking, and I know some people behind me were snickering, and I couldn't figure out. And so I reached back and touched my head. It had pebbles on the back of my head. But I got out here. It cost me $290 to get here with buying car parts on the way. The brethren here found out about it, and when I got ready to go back home, I had a check for $290. And when I might mention, when I came the first year with my dad, nobody knew me or my dad. We were complete strangers to the kingdom. We hadn't been around it long. And when my dad and I got here, Dee and Norma invited us over for lunch, and we thought, do they know us? Do we know them? And it just amazed us to see how friendship and loving each other, and wherever you go, you can make it because you've got good friends everywhere in the world. And so that's one thing that drew me. I came the first 10 years to the lectures, and then I got a little busy, had to cut off in different directions. But I always remember those things. Those years stick in my mind. And Giles Baker, when my dad and I came the first year, we came down here. We didn't know anything. We went over on Red Bluff Boulevard. There was a round hotel called the Red Bluff Inn, and it said $15.95 for a room each night. And we were on a motorcycle, and so it looked like a kind of a rough area to us. And we thought maybe we could pull the motorcycle into our room. So we asked the guy at the desk, could we pull it? He said, oh, yeah, everybody just open up the back door and bring it on in. Everybody does that. And so we went in there and stayed the night. And while we were in there, a fight broke out in the next room. My dad was a Marine. He boxed in the Marines. And so these people were shouting. My dad said, y'all better hush up. We're going to come over and bust your heads. And they said, well, if you don't shut up, we're going to shoot through the wall. So I said, Dad, be quiet. Well, Giles Baker found out about that. He took my dad and I in. And we became great friends. And we've had a great friendship through the years. It's just amazing. Things like that. And you just see the value of friends. And listen to some of these principles. In Proverbs 16, verse 28, a man who sows strife, or a man, some translations say a man of dishonor, spreads chief friends. So, you know, if you cause trouble and difficulty, you are separating chief friends. Here's a picture of people in the Bible that are really close friends. And a bunch of gossip and things can destroy that. Proverbs, 17:9? Whosoever covers offense seeks love, but he that repeateth the matter separateth close friends. So here again, here's some matter you know about, and you keep that under your breath and don't tell that to anybody. You don't sow discord and problems, but if you do, you separate close friends when you go and tell things that shouldn't be. I want you to see some things about friendship before we start looking at what we see in Jesus. But in the 17th chapter of Proverbs and 17, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for diversity or trouble. Here's a picture of friends and brotherhood and how the people in your life, that they're brought to you at the right time for the right reason, because you're going to have trouble and you're going to need your friends when trouble comes. In Proverbs 18:24, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And let me suggest something to you about that. I was trying to see if Randy Harshbarger is here. Did Randy make it? He's way over there. Okay. Last night I went to my favorite restaurant, McDonald's, with a bunch of my friends. And we were sitting there talking, and Randy Harshbarger and Paul Earnhardt are two men that I would give my life for in an instant. I wouldn't even think about it. That's how much I love these two men. And when I get tired, are you like me? My battery gets low and my lights get dim. You know what I mean? My mind doesn't work as sharp. And we were sitting there talking, and my grandmother she always cut up me, and she would say to me sometimes, I'd say, "Thanks, Grandma." And she said, "Well, I can't buy anything with a thank you." Well, I knew she was just cutting up about that, but I sometimes say that to people. That's not very nice to say, you know. And she would also say sometime, I'd say, "Grandma, thank you." And she said, "Well, give me your Social Security number, and I'll claim your income tax." Well, I was trying that out on Paul and Randy last night, and I wasn't thinking about how that might appear. They were saying some things, thanking me for some little bitty thing I did, and I wasn't thinking about how that could hurt those men, how it could make them feel. And then I was saying that, you know, in this lecture, we got Ricky, we got Terry, we got Gary, but then we got, and Paul sat there for a minute, and Paul said, "Yeah, we got palsy." Now, that went over my head, see. It takes me about 10 seconds to get something. And then all of a sudden, I said, "Oh, palsy." And I thought, now, that probably hurt Paul's feelings when I did that. And so I went to my hotel room and couldn't sleep thinking about that. And Paul, would you forgive me for what I said last night? Randy, could you have some mercy and grace for me? You know what we're saying? Christianity 101. This thing works because we have a friend in Jesus. He's taught us how when we mishandle each other. And we don't mean sometimes to do that, but we do. And when we sense and see these pictures of friends in the Bible, how they stand by, they stick closer than a brother. Proverbs 27:11, "He who loves purity of heart and whose speech is gracious will be the king's friend." Here's somebody who knows how to watch your mouth. Be careful with what you say. Friends do that. You know, we sometimes abuse each other. We've got to learn the value of our friendship and what we say and how we say things. Proverbs 27:6, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful." Some people will just butter you up and they're behind your back. They can't wait to stab you. But your friends will wound you. I told Paul coming on the plane, I said, "Now, Paul, when this is over, I want you to give me a report card and tell me if I'm messing it up or helping or whatever you think, because I respect Paul's judgment." And I know that Paul, he's always done this to me. He's always given me. And last night, Randy was critiquing me and helping me. And Randy's a fellow who helps my, I don't have any education, and I don't know anything about grammar. And Randy has taught me a lot about how to not offend the gospel by my crude way of speaking. So he's trying to, and he said, "Last night you got an A on your report card. You know, you did a good job." And so I'm always glad to be around people like that who look at everything and try to help me to do better and to be better. They're my friends, you see. I love them for that because that's what they are. Proverbs 27:9, ointment and perfume, they bring cheer and joy. I didn't write this completely down. But also he tells us that so are the words on the advice of a friend to the heart. And so here's a picture of your friends. I was telling Paul today, he was feeling like he didn't do well last night. And I said, "Paul, you did a great job." But I said, "I'm going to tell you what is most about you. It's who you are. It's not so much the person and the way they say things. It's the way they live and how they treat people and what they do with their life. That's what really gives weight to something." And so that's kind of like smelling a good smell, you know, when you smell something sweet. Proverbs 27:10, forsake not the friends of your father, or his friends, do not forsake, nor go to your brother or your brother's house in a day of adversity or a day of trouble. Here's a picture. Don't think if you've got a brother off somewhere living in California and you got trouble, "Well, I'll go, I don't see him very often, but I'll go stay with my brother and he'll help me." I need to realize that I have friends right here nearby that are family to me. They're closer to me than my own physical family. And so when I get into trouble, what I need to do is just go to my friends and stay right where I am. Don't run off. Don't think I've got to run somewhere to find help. Your help is always near when you have friends. And so these pictures in the Bible, Proverbs 27:17, iron sharpeneth iron as a man sharpeneth his countenance or the face of his friend. Here's a picture of taking iron and something hard and making a knife sharper. It's a picture of how people do that with each other. We help each other. We say things that sometimes are painful and hurtful. Now I want you to turn to the 9th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew and think about this scene where we find Jesus choosing his disciples. And the first time you find this statement about Jesus that is a marvel to me is when you see him coming into the house of Matthew. He goes by this tax collector's booth. He's there working, Matthew 9, verse 9. And Jesus passed from thence, and he saw a man named Matthew sitting in the receipt of customs, and he said unto him, "Follow me." And he arose and followed him. And it came to pass that as Jesus sat at meat in the house, behold, many publicans and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto his disciples, why eateth your master with publicans and sinners? But when Jesus heard that, he said unto them that he said, they that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. But go and learn what this meaneth. I will have mercy and not sacrifice, for I am not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. Now notice, here's a picture of Jesus going to this tax collector. Here was a foreign nation taking taxes from the Jewish people. And sometimes some of the Jewish people would get in for some reason, take a job of working for the IRS for a foreign country. And that really bothered the Jewish people. And so they didn't like Matthew. And you can see that he, to them, is a sinner, and his friends are sinners. And publicans, these tax collectors, these wicked, ungodly people. And so Jesus says to Matthew, "Follow me." What do you think that did to Matthew? A tax collector. Somebody who was despised by most people, you see. What do you think Matthew felt when Jesus... And there's something that Matthew must have known and seen already about Jesus to know. That when Jesus calls you, you've found a real friend. You've really found somebody. I tell this story about a lady that I studied with years ago. She was a very loose lady, and she dressed and acted like the world. And so my wife and I had talked to her several times, had some Bible studies with her. And then she obeyed the gospel one night late. And then she determined to come to services on Sunday morning. She had never been in the church building, didn't know anything about what we did. And so came dressed the way she always dressed. She owned a black mini skirt, some real tall black high heel shoes, and you would wonder where she was going if you would have seen her on the street. And she came in the door, and when she did, some of the older ladies saw her. And you know, we want some proper things to be done. And so these ladies began to set out an attack on this young girl and told her that she was not dressed proper and she should not be here. She should go back home. And so she left. Well, I saw her coming in. Well, then when I got to preach, I kept looking and I couldn't find her. And so I went home and called her and I said, "What happened?" And she said, "Well, I didn't think about how I was dressed, and these ladies told me I shouldn't be there and I shouldn't come back." And I said, "I'm sorry about that." I said, "They didn't know." And I said, "You didn't know either. And it was my fault. I should have probably given you some forewarning." But I think about how, you know, sometime when, you know what we need to do? We need to throw a Matthew party. We're not connected to the world. We're not connected to people out in the world. And so when somebody comes in here who is dirty and nasty and a sinner, and I can remember when I felt coming into a crowd of people like this, I wondered if I was welcome, because I knew I was nasty and dirty. And I knew these people were clean and they didn't want my dirt to get on them. And I could sense it, by the way, some of them, you know, I came out of the hippie era. And so I could sense that I just was not one of them. And it took me a little while to learn how to become one of them. But you see what we do sometimes. We're not like Jesus. Jesus was a friend of these kind of people. And what drew me to thinking about the gospel was thinking about having a friend like Jesus. Somebody who would stick by you and help you and love you and love you with an everlasting love. And so if we could think about maybe the reason the church isn't growing very well, that we don't have any Matthew parties. We're afraid to get around these people. I went to, the elders and I went at a restaurant recently and sat down. We were sitting at this table eating, and this man came in and his wife came in, or this lady with him, and he was a great big guy. His head was shaved bald and he had a big beard. And he had, I think I could have got to California by the tattoos on his chest, you know. He had marks all over him. And so he sat down there. He had his earlobes real big, hung his car keys on his earlobes if he wanted to. And so he was sitting there. And when he came in and looked at us, he could see we were some of those old white redneck guys, you know. And so he sat down at the table, and his friend sat down there, and she was the same way he was. And I could tell that they were kind of, we were glancing over at them some, you know. You just naturally do that. And they were kind of glancing back, and they were looking back like, what are you looking at, you know? And I could sense, I could feel, you know, I could feel the distance. And I can remember how I felt when I came out of the world. I felt the distance because I was a sinner. And I was trying to find a friend somewhere. And so I got up from the table and I went over there. And I put my arm around this old boy. And I said, son, I love the way you part your hair. I like a wide part. He jumped up and said, God bless you, and hugged me. He said, boy, you're okay. Who are you, you know? And I went back over and sat down, and my friend said, what was that all about? What did you say? I said, I was having a Matthew party. But you see, we let people see. They saw that Jesus wanted them. They could sense he wanted to be their friend. They sensed that in him. And he let them see that by doing things. We think, you know, this would have destroyed his ministry. You're going to have that guy come in here and be with us? Well, we can't sit down with somebody like that. Lord, nobody will follow you if you have Matthew following you. Jesus didn't care about that. He cared about the soul of Matthew. And I've often thought, as Matthew penned, somebody said when Matthew left his tax collecting office, he left everything but his ink pen. He took it with him and wrote the story. And we should be writing the same story, you see. Because Jesus was a friend. People saw it. They sensed that about Jesus. And when you get somebody who's lost in the world to see you've got a friend. I heard or read about a man up in Chicago years ago. This boy was going to college up there. And the college had to go out every month and talk to somebody about the gospel to be able to go to school there. And the end of the month had come, this boy forgot to talk to somebody. So he looked out his window and saw down in the park there in New York a man laying on a park bench, you know, down with a newspaper cover. So he ran down there and said, woke this guy up and said, sir, can I talk to you for just a second? And the man said, what is it, son? What do you want? He said, have you ever been saved? And the old wino said, son, I've been saved 1,000 times. I'm just now trying to find somebody who loves me. You know what people in the world are looking for? They're looking for somebody who will love them. Somebody who will show them. Don't sense and show some distance between you and other people. And so Jesus was the kind of person that had the reputation for being that kind of a person. And notice he illustrates this in a great way. He says, you know why I came? I came to call the sick, not the right. Can you imagine somebody going to the doctor? Here's a physician. And you're in great health, and you call your doctor up and say, I got to make an appointment on Monday. I got to come see you. So he, okay, come on. So you go in the office, and you walk in there, and the doctor says, oh, doc, I'm doing great. I don't have any sickness, no allergy trouble, and I don't have any colds, no cancer. I'm just doing so good, and I'm doing so fine. He said, get out of my office and get out of my way. I got work to do. You know, if you feel like you've got it together, you don't need Jesus. And you probably won't be Jesus' friend. And we can see that in the Gospel of Luke when Jesus illustrates the attitude that sometimes we have. But you see here this picture of how people who think they're righteous and how that just doesn't fit with this Jesus who is a friend of sinners. And what about a person who goes to the doctor and he goes in and says, okay, doc, I've come here to the hospital. I need some help. I'm just sick as I can be. I got typhoid fever and cholera and cancer and all this stuff. And a doctor says, son, don't you know this is the hospital? Get out of here. Don't come in here with all that. You'll make the rest of us sick. That's the way we look at the church. Is this a hotel for hypocrites? Or is it a hospital for sick people? Which is it? And when somebody comes in here who looks a little weird or a little different or doesn't really fit into my mold, I look for those people. I want them to know, boy, I'm glad you're here. You're like me, see? We're alive. We're sinners, and we're trying to get this together, and we're trying to help each other. And so you think about another fella. He goes into the doctor, and he's sick. And he goes in there to the doctor and tells the doctor, oh, what's wrong with him? And the doctor says, well, now, go home and save yourself. Straighten up. Get yourself saved. Do what you need to. You know, we can't do that. And if we could just sense that here's the greatest friend, the greatest physician calling us to come in, and we try to act like we don't need a physician, you know. We've got it all together and it's all rolling just right, and so we don't need that. And I've seen so many illustrations in my life where I see this, and we can look at a lot of statements. When you see this picture, you come to this kind of an idea just a little further in the 9th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew, when Jesus is preaching about the kingdom of God, these people, and in verse 36 it says, "But when he saw the multitude, that he was moved with compassion on them, because they were faint and were scattered abroad, and as sheep having no shepherd. And then said he unto the disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray therefore the Lord of harvest that he will send forth more laborers into the harvest." Here's a picture of us looking at this world we're living in and seeing how sick and ready it is to be picked. And yet we just don't. I read about a man, sold shoes, sent a fellow to India to open up a shoe factory. He went over and he surveyed around. He said, don't build a factory over here in India. People don't wear shoes. So they said, well, come on back home. Well, he went back home, and this other fellow said, well, why didn't y'all build that factory in India? He said, well, he went over and said, no need. He said, let me go look at it. So this next guy goes over. He looks around. He says, get everybody over here quick and bring the builder. Nobody's got shoes on over here. Look what we've got. We look at the world. We say, oh, look how bad it is. No, look how great. It's ready for harvest. These people are looking for something. They're starving for something. And we've got to keep, don't get your dirt on me, see. Don't let me wash your dirty feet. I might get some of your dirt on my hands. No, we need to see the compassion of Jesus and the kind of person that he was, and what he did for these people. And I was going to tell you a story about a man that came to Madison years ago. He was a country boy. I'll just tell you his first name is Zeke because that's what it is. But he said he came in the building and he had heard some things about me, and so I talked to him some. He sat down, and he was an old country boy. He reminded me of myself in so many ways. He probably bathed once a week. You know, he worked on the farm. It's been years ago, and it was common in the farming community to be that way. And so he came, and he was sat on about the second row. And after a couple of weeks, some of the members came and said, are you going to let that man come in here and sit up there with those old stinking clothes on and sit in the middle of us and let people think that he's welcome here? And so Zeke overheard somebody say that. When he came to him, and he said, Gary, you know I won't be coming back. And I said, why is that, Zeke? He said, well, I heard what those people said. And they said, I know that I'm not much, and I'm not like other people, and so I won't be coming back. I told people after that, let me tell you the story of Zeke. He started coming, and he told me, he said, Gary, I want you to come up and see me on Monday. I said, okay. So I ride up there on my motorcycle, of all things. I pull up to this old broken-down house. There's a broken-down trailer out in front of it. And so here's a bunch of kids playing in the yard. And there's this old house that the roof is still on, and they're still standing somewhat. And there's a dirt floor, and Zeke has put hay bales inside of that house around the wall. And all his neighbors had come in. And they were come in there, and they were ready to have a Bible study. And so I came in there, and he said, where's your sword at? Where's your Bible at? I said, well, Zeke, I just come up to visit you. He said, a preacher without his sword, somebody get him a Bible quick. And so he got me a Bible. He said, we want you to preach to us. And I said, okay. But I was driving up there. I noticed we were getting ready to have a gospel meeting. Somebody had taken cardboard and took like a black shoe, one of them shoe brushes he used to use, you know. And he had written on there, gospel meeting, Madison, Indiana, and the times and the address. And those signs were all over the road. And I said, Zeke, who put all this? He said, well, I did all that, but I'm trying to get everybody to come to the meeting. And so when I went in there and I preached, started going to pray every Monday and preaching. And in 2 weeks, his oldest son, wanted to obey the gospel. There's a pond out on the back part of their property there. And so I had that old van. And I said, well, let's all get in the van. We'll go baptize your son. Zeke said, no, I want to run in front of the van. I want to get out in the headlights and run. I want to show you how to get to the pond, you know. He was so thrilled, so excited about his son obeying the gospel. But I told the brethren, you know something? I said, when Zeke came into your midst and sat in your midst smelling and dressed the way he was wearing his priestly robes. He was a priest of God. And we couldn't even see it. And he didn't even feel welcome among us. Not with Jesus. I don't know if we'll ever get a good look at ourselves or not. I'm trying to see my friend Jesus. I know why I came to him. I needed what he had, and he gave it to me. And so If we can see just these statements for just a moment, when you brush through, really, the Gospel of Luke, I'm sure you've noticed this. You see that Luke continuously seems to want to point out to people the problem that these Jewish people had. And of course, Luke is recording the story of Matthew in the fifth chapter there. In about verse 27 or so, he invites Levi to follow him. So you find that story there. And then you go a little further and you come over to other illustrations where you find this about Jesus. When the Pharisees were rebelling against Jesus and rejecting him, he tells them in Luke the 7th chapter, verse 34, "The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, 'Behold, a gluttonous man, a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners.' But wisdom is justified of her children." Now, what's that mean? Jesus said, "You know, you all say I'm just some kind of a party person and a friend of sinners." But Jesus said, "Let me tell you something. Wisdom is justified. I am a friend of sinners. I'm doing what I came to do. I'm trying to win people. I'm trying to look out into this dark world and pull people out of the darkness and to get them to come." And so their accusation of Jesus was a picture of him, who he was. He really was. And so he shows us that, no, we can't make you happy. John came, he was fasting and living out in the wilderness and doing what he did, and you weren't happy then. I come trying to be a friend to people and trying to draw them to me, and you don't like that? But he said, "I'm going to tell you what, I'm doing what I came to do. And the actions of what I'm doing and what I'm trying to show you is taking place." And so now you go a little further and you look at that 36th verse of the 7th chapter of Luke. And one of the Pharisees desired him that he would come and eat with him. And so notice in verse 37, "And behold, a woman in that city which was a sinner." Notice how everybody describes this woman. They knew it. She's got this alabaster box. She's weeping, washing Jesus' feet in verse 38, anointing his feet. Simon is sitting there watching, and Simon was saying to himself, "If Jesus knew what kind of a wicked person this woman was, he wouldn't let her touch him. She's a sinner." And so Jesus says some things to Simon. "Simon, a man who owes a great debt. Here's two men who owes. One owes 500 and one owes 50. And the master forgives both of them." He says, "Who would love most?" And so that's a great question. You know why sometimes we don't seem to sense what is it about some people? I've got a fellow in Madison. I converted him as a young boy. I knew he was going to struggle with drugs and other problems. And I tried to spend a lot of time helping him. Well, as time went on, he grew up and went to prison for 10 years. I didn't know where he was. I prayed and prayed for him, hoped he would come back. Well, he came back about, 6 or 7 years ago. He's a ball of fire. He does more personal work and teaching people. When he preaches, he'll have at least 25 people come hear him preach. And he's going to start going into prison with us now. He's got permission to do that. But here's somebody nobody would have anything to do with. People in Madison can't stand him because they knew what he used to be. And he was in prison for doing some terrible things. But you see, people just see him as a sinner. And they don't see him the way Jesus saw this woman. And Frank, he loves the Lord with all his being because the Lord's forgiven him. And I think that sometimes we might wonder why we're not excited and thrilled and overwhelmed and we just can't. And I better watch myself, hang on. And we just don't seem to be thrilled about it. It's because we don't feel like we've done much. Well, we've been pretty good. Now, I guess I can be baptized. Jesus was. He did fulfill all righteousness, so I'll do that too. You know, I don't know if I really need it. And we don't sense how we all are in the same boat. You may not have been as far off in the wickedness as I was, but you were wicked. We're all ungodly. We're all sinners. And so we need to look at this picture, how Jesus shows this woman was forgiven because she was forgiven much. That's why she loves much. And Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." And you just go through in the book of Luke, and you keep seeing these pictures Jesus paints of people who are like that. In the 18th chapter, you remember that story there of the publican and the sinner. Why is Jesus showing, and the Samaritan and the priest in Luke the 10th chapter, why does Jesus take this priest and these men going down the road, and there's this Samaritan going down the road, and when this priest and Levite come along, they just go on by, but the Levite does something. Why does he pick the Levite up? Here's somebody, they said, "Well, he's a Samaritan." That's what I think about Samaritans. Jesus said, "You know, the Samaritan had compassion." The Samaritan cared about people. He didn't know who he was. Giles Baker didn't know me and my dad. We could have been bank robbers for all he knew. Took us right in and became our friend. I think he even let us borrow his car when we were here. And he told me today, he said, "I didn't know you were in the car. I still got the old car, you know. You could have borrowed a little old car." But you see what I'm saying to you? It's the heart of Jesus that draws me to him. He's the friend that I need. And I'm going to tell you, he won't let you down. He won't fail you. And so if you see these pictures of people who go into the temple and pray, and they thank God they're not like me. I know there are a lot of people who think, "Oh, I'm glad I'm not like that old boy. He sure is bad." Well, you're right, I am. But I've got a great friend. And that's what makes me keep going. This is what I call Christianity 101. Let's have a Matthew party. Let's try to reach out to people. Let's try to find people who are laying on the park bench somewhere. Or somebody who's got their ear drilled full of holes and tattoos all over the face. Let's see a human being there who's lost and begging for somebody to see him. I went in a store one time and a boy had put white powder all over his face and had black marks and dressed wild. And I went in and I was looking at him. He said, "What are you looking at?" I said, "I'm looking at you, old buddy." He said, "Why?" I said, "I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to figure out why you want to look the way you're looking." And I said, I'm trying to understand that. Could you help me?" And he said, "Well, sir, I've never had anybody really pose that to me." And I said, well, why is it?" And he said, "I guess I really think nobody notices me." He said, "I think nobody knows I'm even here. I'm trying to get somebody to see me." I said, "Well, old buddy, somebody does see you. Somebody does care about you. But you see, we think those people are doing that because they're just old, bad, wicked, mean. And some of them are. You've got to watch them. They'll eat you up, some of them. But there's a lot of them are there because they're looking for something." That's where I was. I hated my life. I was wicked and I hated it. And I wanted to get away from it. And I found out that Jesus wanted to be my friend. I've tried to never forget that. Now, we could look at a lot of passages I didn't look at. In James 2, verse 23, God spoke to Abraham as a man speaks to his friend. Can you imagine? God wants to be your friend and talk to you like he talked to Abraham and try to tell you things and be that kind of person with you. And Jesus said, "If you love me, you'll be my friend. You'll do what I say." And he said, "I'll come and I'll live in you and you can live in me. We'll be such close friends." My youngest son and I, for years, we just were the best, the closest of friends. And it's because the two older boys were older and they went away. And so Matt and I spent a lot of time going together and we talked. So if you talk to Matt, you'll find out, that sounds like Gary Sandusky talking, you know. And you call on the phone and Matt answers, "Gary?" And no, it's Matt. And you just find out all the baloney comes out of him, same baloney comes out of me, because all my baloney's inside of him, see? And all his baloney's inside of me. And when that happens to people, you abide in each other because you're great friends. That's what Jesus wants. Well,